Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello, friends!
Brian Brushwood.
I'm back. I'm here. I'm not in Miami. I'm not in New York. It's here in Austin, Texas, like I've always been, because I'm a responsible co-host.
It's good. I noticed you've got some morning beverages here. That's because we're recording at a brand new time for us. We've usually done Sundays. Now we're trying Mondays.
Or as we like, basically, we wanted to participate in this whole idea that everybody who's not us has of like Monday being a quote unquote work day where work you spend day. Quote all day quote unquote working. It's very novel. We're excited to experience it.
I don't know, a little insight, at least into my life, when it was proposed, hey, do you want to do this on 11:30 Monday? I'm like, yeah, I guess I can get up that early.
You're like, yeah. You know, you just make that that trip to your iPhone alarm setting, and it's just like you realize that there's nothing before 1 o'clock, and you're like, geez, we're gonna have to peel back to the AM.
Oh God, I'll just switch a PM to an AM. just reuse the alarm. Gentlemen, I've got a stumper for you. It's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a challenge, but we're going to try this anyway.
All right, I'm ready. I'm feeling it.
Let's go.
All right, I got my puzzle solving hat on. It looks an awful lot like my regular hat.
I've got my enigma crushing underoos tightly bound to me.
A family in Abilene, Texas was recently shocked to discover that their house was infested with blank. Their first clue came when a fully grown blank emerged from their blank Tuesday morning, startling their young son, blank.
Okay. I feel like there's only one obvious starting point on the Weird Things podcast, and I'm going to have to go with snakes and vent. Unless you have
hashtag
another
snakes, always snakes, hashtag snakes for life, snakes, 100 years of snakes.
All right. And the second part they found where?
Oh, in the heating vent, like in the air conditioning stuff. Mm-hmm. I feel like, no.
Let me proceed. I found this big clump and I knew it was a blank. The little boy quickly alerted his mom to the unexpected visitor, blanking up the blank. I was just like, what did you do with this? What do you do with this? I don't know, she told the station.
Justin, you seem like you have an idea.
I think it's the toilet.
Go ahead.
A toilet?
The toilet, yeah.
Wait, snakes coming out of the toilet?
Yes.
Man. Okay, this takes place where, Andrew?
Texas? I don't know if you heard of it.
Abilene, Texas.
Okay, so Abilene, Texas, that's rattlesnake country for sure.
Yeah. The A in Abilene stands for, there's a snake in the goddamn toilet!
Well, okay, so that's the only problem is I don't really follow the toilet part of it. Read it again with the blanks. They because it sounded like you were saying like a nest of snakes or something, a blank of blank.
A family in Abilene, Texas was recently shocked to discover their house was infested with rattlesnakes.
Oh, wait, okay. Is that the answer?
Well, yeah, it is snakes. It's always snakes, right? It's always snakes.
Welcome to Weird Things, Brian.
That was the gimme. You think Andrew's gonna come in here on our first morning show and like start launching the hard stuff? No, this is the get us going.
This is basic. All right, we got a primer happening.
Wait, don't show this. Don't show this yet, Bryce. I don't want them to see because this is like remember how we had in Alabama the old whitey or whatever that was.
Yeah. The white Bigfoot.
White booger. The white booger.
The white booger. Yeah.
Booger. Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna like so She recruited one of the kid's older brothers to get the shovel because he was 9. And they found an infestation of they crawled underneath the house where they found another 10, 5 being babies, 24 snakes total, including the toilet snake. OK, now I'm going to tell you, this is anybody prospective people looking to move to a new community. This is what you need to do. The first step you need to do is if you find that they have this service there, don't go. How did they get rid of the snakes? You ready for how they got rid of the snakes?
I mean, I would imagine you chop their heads off, right?
Oh, Brian, do you do everything? Do you do everything around the house?
I mean, no, I do virtually nothing around the house. That's why I want to chop off the heads of anything that annoys me.
You'd call somebody, right?
Yeah, of course.
Who would you call?
Yeah.
1-800-SnakeKillers.org.
How about you call Big Country Snake Removal?
Yes! Yes!
When you live in a town where there is enough snake infestation problem that you can have an ad in the yellow pages for snake removal, maybe that town is
Brian, why don't you pick up the phone and call Big Country's Snake Removal?
Yeah, this hold on.
You are the father of the Abilene family.
Oh, golly, I'm so worried. I mean, I live here in Abilene. It's a nice small town. I hope the snake removal guys can take care of it.
Big Country Snake Removal.
Oh, hi. My name is Brian. I've got 2-3 lovely daughters and a wife, and we've got a mess of...
They don't sound like snakes. That's a joke I like to break the ice with. What's your problem?
Well, I mean, please don't remove my daughters, but we do have a lot of rattlesnakes. Baby snakes, adult snakes. They're all coming up through the toilet.
Dad, there are 13 adult snakes here.
13 adult snakes. That's my life partner, Andrew Maine.
Well, 13 adult, and where'd you say they came from?
The toilet.
All of them, like one after another, like a clown car.
it was like reverse pooping. It was amazing. They just kept on coming out.
And now they're just all over the place. Like,
well, I mean, I assume so. I'm mainly relying on my 9-year-old daughter to tell me what happened. She says there's a lot of rattlesnakes upstairs.
All right.
And little Millie's gone to sleep and won't wake up.
Okay, all right. Apparently it's a problem. Can we please get the snakes taken care of? Because otherwise, I got a shovel. I'm going to start chopping heads off.
All right. Well, I'll be heading down there, but just so you know, I'm not going to touch the snakes because they got cooties. Bye.
No!
I don't have a lot of confidence in this snake removal service here.
I mean,
I feel like it's just he mailed away for this course and they just sent him like the squeezers from the department store to get the stuff off the high shelf.
Sure, sure.
And like maybe one page of instructions.
He had a very professional bedside manner, though. That's what made me feel like you know what? I'm going to give him 5 stars on Yelp. Hold on 1 second.
He hasn't removed the snakes yet, but... So those of you who may remember are, and I think Brian quickly forgot because it was so horrifying, was this snake being pulled out of the toilet video we watched.
Right? Oh, God.
Was that in India?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. We laughed at India. Ha, 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 India. Not here. Not in our borders.
Yeah. That's why.
Guess again. Apparently they pulled 24 snakes, 13 of being adults, rattlesnakes from there. So again, that's a pro tip coming for you from your friends at Weird Things, like check for snake removal, which you might think it's cool that they got that service in your town, but that means they need that service in their town.
Do we want to see the photos real quick?
Yes. Also, make sure to, oh my God.
This is about,
by the way, Brian, you have not more accurately painted a word picture than you describing it as reverse poop.
There's like 2.5-3 feet of
snake. I'm just going to switch to a liquid diet from then on.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's horrifying. I'm adult diapers from then on. That is so, folks, let's describe that to them, please.
I mean, it's exactly what it seems like. Imagine a poop coming out of the toilet to go to your butt.
No, imagine 1.5 feet of a rattlesnake sticking out of the toilet into
too,
the pool.
Like all of the above. Oh, I don't like it. I don't like it. I'm not for it.
Hey, do you guys want to hear? Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, this is a photo of the nest that they found of 10
that
adult...
That is just a gang of these snakes!
Hey, guys, I got a great place to hide Easter eggs.
Hey, for the record, rattlesnakes are crazy deadly. Like when we were shooting a certain television show, there was a certain rattlesnake handler, and he explained, like, oh, this one's called S-Head. He used a curse word, though. He was like, because he hates everyone. He bites them all. And then he, like was an Aussie. And he's like, well, like, how far can they leap? He's like, oh, I half again this size. And he's like, so this one's what? We're about 7 feet. It's like, so if I get within 4 feet, you're like, yeah, he'll kill you. And then he holds out a thing, and the rattlesnake strikes it and leaves like a little puddle of clear material, and he holds it up in front of my face and says, yeah, it's enough to kill all of us here. And then it is like, anyway, enjoy your shoot. and commence the shoot where I'm pinning down a rattlesnake. It was terrifying. It was totally terrifying.
Hey, what by the way, do you guys want to hear the names of other Abilene snake removal services?
Oh my God, there's a competition for your business, of course.
Well, number one, you got to assume that Big Country has a good reputation because they passed over ASAP animal removal.
Which you would think you want them as soon as possible out of your life, but apparently not as much as you want the big country.
And then, of course, there is a rent to kill.
What?
Oh my God! It's called Rent to Kill.
R-E-N-T. Rent to Kill.
That's a big company. That's been around forever. I've heard of Rent to Kill.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Then you got Orkin out there. Sure. Rhino Pest Control.
Least popular is Rescue the Animals SPCA. Not a lot of compassion for the rattlesnakes.
Hmm.
Yeah. Burn it with fire.
Yes. So. And by that, Andrew means the entire town of Abilene. Like, you can please
maybe
move,
Texas.
But like,
nothing wrong with Abilene.
It's just going to be safe at this point. By the way, Big Country wolf. Snake Removal located in Buffalo Gap, Texas.
Buffalo Gap.
Yeah, Texas. Apparently, where to keep the snakes in the Buffalo Gap.
I feel like we should move along before I say something.
Yeah. Well, listen. We don't remove snakes. But we do remove evil mind gremlins from your head.
Yeah,
about
man.
What to do?
Look,
with your
here's
spare
the thing.
Time.
You know what? Andrew's too nice to say it. Justin and I, we're going to tell it to you like it is. You're infected. You're infected with a bad virus that's going to make your life miserable, and you're going to die. You have mind gremlins, and the only way to get it out of your head is for us to show up and teach you the truth about Bigfoot, the paranormal, and all kinds of crazy stuff.
And the only way you can do that is by going to patreon.com/weirdthings. You can support this very, very show by doing exactly that. Kick in whatever you would like. And thank you to everybody who already has, putting us over the vaunted $500 an episode mark. You know, we still have 8 more to go. And you, too, can be the 420th supporter of this very, very show. So patreon.com/weirdthings. Thank you to everybody who has, and thank you to everybody who will.
Is that what we're going for? We're going for 420 before 666?
No, we're going for like 1,000 patrons, actually, Brian.
What? No, but I mean, our next, you know, it's like when you're running, you don't think about, oh, I'm going to finish this marathon. You think, I'm going to survive 800 more meters, right?
I just don't want somebody showing up and seeing there's 420 and being like, all right, you know, I'm done.
Oh, they got it. Yeah. No, fair enough.
Oh, no, I'm just saying everybody better cram in right now because it's like one of those progressive jackpots on a slot machine. You know, it's coming up. It's coming up. You better get in there real quick.
I like it.
Right. True that. Gentlemen, you know what we like? We like learning. We like reading. We like getting information in our heads.
Yep.
How many of you tried speed reading?
You know what? I gave that a try based on... And this is an unfair, but I would say accurate analysis. There was a speed reading course that was taught by notorious individual Kevin Trudeau, who Kevin Trudeau has done memory courses. He's done a number of other things. He is famous for buying infomercials late night.
Prison time.
He went to prison. He was banned from selling products in the United States. The FTC full-on said, you are not allowed to sell anything in the U.S. because you're so full of lies. And then he leaned back on, he's like, well, you can't take away my First Amendment rights. And so started writing the natural cures, quote unquote, they don't want you to know about, and continued to make a ton of money on that. But I remember he had a speed reading course, and I started it and then found out a little bit more about the individual and suddenly lost my appetite. Funny how that works.
True. And I know we covered one of the things before, like a couple different systems for like flashing words at you really, really fast and that. And we had a discussion
That was the closest that I got to it, was when you were mentioning that the whole idea that you could just flash the words very, very quickly and you would wind up reading more.
Yeah, this is as a matter of fact, if you want a demo of it, this seems to be legit to me. It seems like you're listening to an audiobook at 1.5 speed. Spreeder.com, S-P-R-E-E-D-E-R. Like, I'm watching it right now, and if you're watching the video, you're able to...
Yeah, so this is a bit of example text that they put in, but you put a piece of text in, and right now it's playing it back at 300 words per minute, but it's like a single word for like a fraction of a second.
So there's a book out. Mark Seidenberg has written Language at the Speed of Sight, How We Read, Why So Many Can't, and What Can Be Done About It. And there's an excerpt in Wired where he talks about speed reading courses and speed reading and basically says that all that's pretty much BS.
Like including the Spreeder stuff that we were just seeing?
Yeah, because the problem is that he breaks it down. When you start getting to actual retention, what happens when you try to see if people can retain what's happening, you find out there really isn't any kind of retention. And in fact, that that he talks about breaks down the different myths, like take in more information at a time, and explains there's just limits to the we talk about, like they say, like these things are based on, oh, we're going to get rid of sub-vocalization. He says that's just a myth. That's not really what slows down or impedes your reading process, his speeds. He says that, you know, that we read at a certain speed. We do this sort of thing because our brain takes a certain amount of time to process. That's what takes the time, not that we're sub-vocalizing. It doesn't have to do with the eye tracking or anything like this. So he's gone through and he's broken down a number of things, explained why we haven't been able to come up with these, if you had, and this is sort of my argument, if we had really great effective forms of speed reading, you think we would have moved towards that if you had the information retention.
That's the argument against the idea of teaching chimpanzees sign language, is basically if it's in their brain, if the modules are there to process language the way humans process language, then they would have naturally evolved it on their own. For example, I just finished The Blank Slate, the Steven Pinker book based on your recommendation, Andrew. And one of the things he mentions is whenever you have individuals, you know, who even if they don't speak the same language together, let's say their parents speak English and the other parents speak French, but the peer group is so powerful that the kids will invent their own language. That's where Creole comes from, right? Whereas, meanwhile, the idea that teaching a chimpanzee sign language is roughly the equivalent of going to an island filled with flightless birds, showing up and then just waving your arms up and down, and then suddenly they know how to fly. That was the metaphor that was put to me in my pseudoscience class back in college.
Well, he goes into and explains some of the different, like he goes, says that speed reading's been, and not a new idea, says the ancient Greeks experimented with a method called balstrophedon, literally ox turning, where they would have one line of text would go one way, then right below it, the line of text would go the other way. So that way you could just read back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, or bidirectional reading. That really didn't catch on, in case you didn't notice. There is, the RSVP, Rapid Serial Visual Presentation. This is where it's flashed across a screen, which has been around, but different people have kind of reinvented it and thinking that it's a new thing. And when they've done studies on this sort of stuff, that they find that there was a laboratory study, college students could read with RSVP at up to 700 words per minute with good comprehension at about triple their normal speeds. Alas, our experiments also found the subjects could only sustain at high speeds with good comprehension for short bursts. And part of this has to do with our brains take in things in chunks. When we measure, let's say, kids watching Sesame Street, some kids will sit there, watch it all the way through. Other kids will get up and go around and play with little projects and stuff. Same level of retention. The kid who's watching and doesn't get up, it's sort of all of a sudden he's just started to think about bananas, you know, and his mind drifts. And you have these buckets that our brain sort of has. Our RAM gets full and you can't squeeze anything more in it. That's when we get fatigue or we just sort of ignoring everything.
So how does that so it seems like the comprehension killer is the speed at which you're running through stuff. You can increase the speed and you can feel like you're getting everything, but the comprehension is not really great. I assume that there's no science on this particular aspect, but I'm curious whether or not that means that when I listen to audiobooks at 1.25 speed or 1.5 speed, am I not getting it in spoken words? I wonder if there's a difference between translating the written word fast versus listening to the spoken word slightly quicker.
Well, I would imagine your audiobooks, the words per minute isn't going to be too dramatically different. I mean, I don't think it's like, you know, because like there are a lot of fast speakers. There are a lot of language where people speak fast, but that's not, you know, you're not going from 300 words a minute to like 2,000 words a minute.
Right.
In my guess. And so I think you're within that comfort zone of like, and certainly the more you read and the more you're familiar with words and concepts, the faster you can go. But trying to figure out these sort of shortcuts of, you know, oh, get rid of the vocalization or only scan the middle or these other sort of things, which I've heard, you know, people tell us these things. I remember since in high school as if they were facts. And then you find out, well, you know, my teachers went to a course and somebody told them that and it seemed to make sense. But after the fact, you're like, I don't know.
Do you think that this is one of those pseudosciences that's just going to persist because it is this like semi-scholarly pursuit to want to read more and read faster? And so therefore it's not going to be like scorned quite as harshly as something that might not be involved in some sort of academic pursuit?
It is definitely the kind of thing that even if somebody gets it wrong, I think they get an automatic pass because it's a noble goal to shoot for. Whereas, you know, like in a way that, you know, finding Sasquatch or the Loch Ness Monster or proving ghosts or whatever might not be as noble as wouldn't it be great if humanity could learn faster and better?
Well, it's also a very fuzzy area because we know you can improve your reading comprehension. You can improve the rate at which you read. We all started from barely not being able to read to being able to read. And people who read more are better at it than people who don't. And so we know there's this range of improvement that can be achieved. It's what that upper limit is. And that's when the problem gets into like when it's these super high levels of that. And I've had these discussions with people a lot like, oh, you know, about speed reading. It's like, what's your retention? What's your retention? Like, yes, you can say every single word. But when you get quizzed on it afterwards, what happens?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, because comprehension's really what it's about, you know, like burning through a thing and just doing the Johnny Five, like, oh, great. Like,
input.
You
know,
that doesn't really do you much.
I'm with audiobooks. I'm always backing up. Like, did they say million? Did they say billion? Where was this clear? Because I want to make sure that I get every single detail. So I back up on audiobooks all the time just to be sure. And that was one of my things with like the Flash sort of reading things. Like, I can't control that. And if I don't get a name or I don't get anything, there's not a way to go back. And so much of me is going back and tracking to make sure I got that little detail.
Huh. Although, to be fair, I'm kind of the opposite. The reason why I wound up getting attracted to audiobooks was because I could kind of lapse a little bit. I mean, Andrew and Brian, who have spent a lot of time around me, will probably attest that I can be a bit absent-minded at times and wander. I've often found reading intimidating, physical reading intimidating, because I will wander and then I'll feel like I need to go back and I'm just constantly in this loop and it provides anxiety for me. Whereas an audiobook, I can kind of zonk for a little bit and then it's still going. And if I find myself totally lost, I'll go back. But if I can kind of pick up where we were, then I'll just stay where we were.
That's so funny because I very much am the opposite. And I know we've discussed this before, but it's like in a physical book, I hate the way my Judas eyes will betray me. Like if I turn a page and it's the end of the chapter, I can't not in my peripheral vision notice that it's the end of the chapter. And especially
blame your eyes, Brian.
Well, I mean, they move on their own. They jump ahead. They're all just like big block of text. Oh, there's dialogue coming up. And I'm like, no, don't do that. Read each word the way it was intended.
Whereas, gosh, darn you, eyes selling me out for 3 pieces of silver.
Yes, exactly.
Brian's at the mall with Bonnie. Some girl walks by. Brian, it's me. It's my Judas eyes, baby. It's my Judas eyes.
I mean, it feels that way, but that's one of the things I deeply adore about audiobooks is that it's the only medium through which I actually experience each word the way the author intended, and I have blinders on. I don't know how close to the end we are. I don't know what, you know, what chunk is coming up next, or whether anything's weird, or whether or not we're about to be at a break to change scenes or whatever. Like I mean, there's a lot that I really dig about the audiobook experience.
I heartily agree. I love me audiobooks. Of course, I go through periods where I read a lot, and then I go through periods where they start to back up and I have all those credits and I'm like, oh, what do I do? What do I do? I mean, if you have a couple credits, you could, you know, get the audiobook for my new book, Blackfall, coming out next month.
I mean, a little plug. That would be a good use. You could do that. That credit would find a nice home with Blackfall.
You know, gentlemen, we talked a little bit about this before, and it's coming up again. And I think the more this thing gets mentioned, the more these things it was discussed. A couple of years ago, we talked about, like, what do we think might be happening in the future? You know,
is it rattlesnakes? If it's rattlesnakes, no. You could just blink.
God,
just,
I hope not. Just no, blink. This may be the one place we'll be safe from them. We'll
okay,
see.
Good.
The idea of private space stations.
Dude, this is happening, man. Like, space is going. Okay, so you realize that when I first started touring, I was able to do something that no generation before me was ever able to do. I was able to essentially live in the center of the United States and commute to any place in the entire world. If I had a show, if somebody booked a show anywhere in the United States, I could wake up that morning in Austin and plan on hopping on a plane, getting there soon enough that I could drive to the show and do that show by 9 or 10 p.m. Like, that's going to happen for space. Like, that sounds insane to anyone who traveled by air in the 1960s or the 1940s or whatever. But it became a reality and a foundation to build a business on in the late 1990s, early 2000s. Same thing's going to happen with space, freaking space.
So a company called Axiom Space, its chief executive is Michael Soffredini, who is the former NASA program manager for the ISS. I think we've mentioned this before, but this was an article that came up in space.com. The company has plans to send up a module to the International Space Station in 2020 to attach to the ISS. Then once the ISS reaches its end of life, to detach the module from the station and make it its own standalone space station.
Would either of you guys trust these inflatable modules? Because like they recently attached that, right? The one that self-inflated.
Yeah, the Bigelow one. Yeah.
Maybe I'm racist against balloon modules, but I don't trust them. I don't trust them.
I don't know that this is a balloon module.
But whenever these questions come up, there is wise words that were spoken to me once by Andrew Main about the idea of future tech fear and how silly it tends to be in our era of unlimited progress. And the phrase is always like, well, would you trust these banks filled with human blood? Like, oh, surely, like, it's just sitting there, banks of human blood, like, not what pumps through you and me, it's just standing there, stagnant, full banks of them.
There was this article years ago, it was an editorial in Newsweek, and I couldn't figure out if, I thought it was satire, because they were talking about, like, growing human organs, and it was like, imagine a laboratory filled with brainless bodies. The only purpose is to provide us with organs. I'm like, okay, all right.
Seems
oh,
reasonable.
That's what offends you.
Oh, yeah.
Brainless, like, there are no brains there. Like, I mean, yeah, it's a little creepy. Like, yeah, it's a creepy image.
Don't
but
you understand, Andrew? Without the brains, how will the bodies know how much they're suffering underneath our power?
So as far as I can tell, Axiom, they're not doing inflatable modules. This is just like a kind of just a standard module. If you go to axiomspace.com and they talk about, they have a timeline, commercial launch. They want to attach to the ISS in 2020. And then the proposed, you know, time frame for detaching from the ISS would be between 2024, 2028. So less than 10 years away. Private
wow.
space station.
Hey, not for nothing, but wasn't Axiom the name of the space station in WALL-E?
I don't know.
Yeah, Oh, it definitely was the ship. It was the Axiom. Otto was the evil robot, and everybody was overweight.
And the way you got to look at this, too, is like a space station's kind of like it's a thing in orbit that you can go attach other stuff to. You have certain services and things built into it. So you start with this one thing, and like that big, giant spinning wheel space station we want to see one day could start with a little module. Like, well, we're going to add on this other thing, and we're going to build this thing outwards, and we're going to continue going on until we have this. But if you go to Axiom Space, you can check it out. And these are credible people. I mean, this is a guy that was, you know, in charge of the ISS for NASA, and, you know, a lot of real, you know, this isn't, sometimes you get these proposals from people who are just, there's one, no expertise or whatsoever. That's more like, wouldn't it be cool if we did this? Like, yeah, what's your plan? Well, we'll hire somebody to make a plan for us.
Yeah, first, pay us $25 and a piece so you can submit your video, and then we'll tell you. No, this seems legit, and you got to figure this is a lot of the stuff that we talked about is in the offing in a world where we are just going to space more frequently and cheaper, right?
How far do you think we are from the first global fugitive just hiding up in his space station? Like, will that happen in our lifetime? Will there be somebody like, let's say there's somebody who had a lot of money, was accused of, I hesitate to use actual names, but let's picture Julian Assange is currently in a embassy because it protects him from having to deal with this sexual charge. How far are we from the, instead of an embassy, it being just a dude being like, peace out, I'm going to space?
I, on a long enough timeline, Brian, yes. that guy can't even get across the street to go to Starbucks. I don't know how he's going to get to a spaceport, which you got to imagine will be the most secure facilities you could have.
Well, sure. I mean, that's my point is that, you know, that's where he is now. But obviously, at some point, he got to the spaceport before the heat was on.
You're saying, like, I'm going to go to space further out for me, and then I'm going to be. I guess when you have enough people up in space, I think that's the answer.
So in our lifetime or not in our lifetime?
I am very much looking forward to Roman Polanski accepting an Oscar from space.
I think it's because you could have somebody commit a crime or do something up there, and you're going to have arguments over jurisdiction, and that, which we'd have it established, but you could still have. Doesn't mean that the lawyers are all going to agree.
How long until the first space murder? Yeah, over. Just place your bets. Place your bets, people. Space murder. What you got?
I mean, who said we haven't already had it?
Yeah, because talk about the Wild West, man. That's the wildest of West. You know, up beyond the horizon, right?
Wait, do we think a space murder has already happened?
I mean, depends if you want to call incompetence and the death of astronauts murder.
Well, no, that would be manslaughter one. At worst.
It's happened. Bryce just found this out for us.
This documentary. This
is a documentary from 1985.
Murder in space.
Can you find a trailer for Murder in Space?
It stars Wilford Brimley. Oh, my goodness.
And Michael Ironside. Holy cow.
This might be Weird Things Film Club.
Yeah. All right. I think we got one.
Yeah. I mean, Brian. I think. Yeah. I think it's at some point. Oh, here we go.
Look at this documentary.
Wow. It kind of looks like Star Wars.
Spaceship overhead. We get.
It's 1980s.
Turn up the volume.
It looks like it says Spencer for Hire, but it says Murder in Space.
Yeah. Michael Ironside with mostly hair. And I can't hear any volume.
Guest appearance by Carl Sagan, apparently.
Oh, here we go. Floating bodies, people in hats. They got really good gravity. Wilford Brimley yelling at some people.
Oh, my God. All right. Save this. We got to see this sometime.
Yeah. By the way, Wilford Brimley, who apparently was not taking any of the cues from the wardrobe department, he's just like, no, I'm just going to show up, whatever.
Everyone's in spacesuits except me. Well, I'm busy.
He's on Earth, guys. He's on Earth.
Do you know how much money I'm making from Quaker Oats right now? You have no idea. Yeah. I'll be in the firm next decade.
And then I got to, you know, get some stuff done because I'm Wilford Brimley. Getting things done. Commercials, TV, everything. Just like I'm America's grandpa. Yes. So, apparently it happened, Brian, 1985. It's been done.
All right.
But yeah, I think you get enough people up there, it's gonna happen. And there's the stuff NASA, the things NASA doesn't want to tell you.
By Kevin Trudeau.
Kind of, What's that?
By Kevin Trudeau, including the fact that you don't need to eat anything. You can eat goat fur.
We had a Skylab crew that basically went and mutinied.
What?
Because I was in the 1970s. We had Skylab up there, and they were complaining about the workload. They said, you're stressing us out. There's too much work. We need to ease out this schedule. And they're like, nope, this is why you're up there. This is what you got to go do. And so what happened was they said, you know what? We're just not going to respond to you. And they spent an entire day. And I think it would make a great movie. They spent an entire day
going on strike,
doing their own thing.
Wow.
December 28, 1973, they refused communications from Mission Control during this period.
I don't know if I'm happy or not happy that your friend of mine, Richard Garriott's dad, was not in that crew.
I checked when I heard about that was to see if his...
If it was his dad being super
punk
rock.
Yeah, it was his dad. So they did this sort of mutiny, and those guys never flew again.
Ooh.
So, I mean, you got to know that that's happening, right? When you start refusing orders up in space, like that's
but
your,
also,
when,
oh
when
my
you
God.
Get back, you're grounded.
They were space mutineers. How much better is that than, I went to space twice. Oh, yeah? I defied orders in space. I became a space mutineer.
They, after the fact, they went and they looked to see what was going, you know, what caused this, what contributed. This was a 12-week length of stay. This was, you know, 3 months. This was the longest we'd ever put our own astronauts up there for that period of time. The, how much work they're putting them through, et cetera. And so it changed up, you know, what they did. But, you know, the NASA's as far as like how they worked astronauts, but apparently they held a grudge, you know, so.
Am I remembering this right? Skylab was... Like they took the empty vessel that held the fuel for the rocket and then just threw stuff in there to outfit it and called it.
No. It was just an upper stage for a Saturn. It was a design.
Okay. But it was designed. Okay. Got it. So it wasn't like it had fuel in it and then they spent the fuel and then.
No,
and then
it was like, imagine
inside.
Kind of the upper portion, the stuff that you'd go send to the moon and all that back. It was
got
just
it.
The upper stage put into orbit. But
okay.
But it used a Saturn V, I believe it used a Saturn V booster for that. So that was sort of part of that. So, but yeah, I mean, that was a, you know, we didn't know what the limits were there, and you had a number of people at NASA were like, no, you need to follow through and do this. And so it was a bit of a challenge there. So that was changed much of what we did after the fact. The Skylab was a very interesting period of history. It's one of these things that doesn't get as much attention. These were effectively our first sort of space stations. They had solar power. They had, you know, large space inside of there. And, you know, we got a lot of interesting information from doing that. So.
Yeah, this was on the tail end of the Cold War space race, where it was all about like outspending the other guy. What a weird artifact that was, where it wasn't actually about, or it appears to not actually have been about scientific advancement, but instead just being able to, you know, outflex the muscle. It's as though instead of fighting, the U.S. or Russia just got into a flex off, and then they took like the most badass bodybuilder pictures to win.
Well, I mean, to be fair to NASA, I would say that NASA's intent certainly was for the science, and for that part of it was to try to accomplish that.
Oh, sure, sure. I don't doubt that about NASA at all. Mm. However, the legislators signing for the budgets, I think, were a little more into the.
Yeah. And, you know, it was a missed opportunity to, you know, the really critical technologies we could have developed to have, you know, have both a technological and a space advantage. You know, if we developed reusables and things like that, it would have been better. But that certainly didn't fit into kind of the contracting model.
By the way, that's one of those things that Carl Sagan kind of railed against in his book, The Demon Haunted World. And I think there's another book. A Pale Blue Dot is where he really goes nuts on it, saying like, stop sending people into space. It's dumb, it's cumbersome, it's expensive and slow. You could send 10 robots for the cost of a single human being.
He's not here to defend himself, but I totally disagree with him on that. And you know, the head of the Mars Robotic Rover program says that one guy in a spacesuit in an hour could gather more data than what we've been able to do from every single mission ever.
Sure.
You know, we're just not there. And I understand that I think that it should be doing both. I think the problem is just that we weren't developing the technology to make it more cost effective.
Well, it also seems like one of those, like, you can't jump two spots where it's like, if we understand what we would want to do and what we would want to collect and what we would want to examine physically, then we can design better robots that allow us to do that mechanically, right? And considering the distance and cost and time it takes to put anything on these far-flung rocks that we wanted to learn more about, that's a really, really high-cost gamble to say, yeah, look at all these rovers that are on there now. And it's like, oh, wow, look how outdated all the stuff is. And look how much of a challenge it is to keep in communication with them. Whereas, like Andrew said, one dude, you know, you can get a lot done.
Yep.
And now the next robot would be that much better.
I think the answer is going to be everything, all the above. Oh, boy. Gentlemen, what time is it?
I would say it's about looking at my watch here. It might indeed be Journey Quest time.
What?
Journey Quest.
Where were we in Journey Quest last? It was a big moment. We had just gotten into what we thought was a time machine. Turns out maybe not. The dude was going to flip the switch, right? But then he died.
No, dude didn't die. You tried to drag him in there, but he resisted. He got out of it. You're inside of a machine that looked remarkably like an industrial oven, and he was speaking German, and it was very, very suspicious. Your proof that this man could bridge time and space was what? Was what, yeah. Brian?
Oh, it was your chips.
Yeah. It was my 90s. Oh boy, Oberto. beef jerky chips, right, to cash in on the Atkins craze of the late 90s. Yeah.
Well, and he was doing this by, he was proving that he had a time machine by asking us what fast food we would want from the past, and he would present it to us piping hot.
I got to tell you, I mean, what are the odds that he just had that?
That he had a huge freezer of all of your foods?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, when we left our heroes, we realized inside this gigantic industrial structure, it also happened to be next to a food stockpile that had access to all of these food elements throughout all of history.
Which, by the way, it's really a bummer if it turns out that we were hoodwinked, Justin. It's really a bummer because I was hoping maybe one of us would have been sent into the past and that there could be kind of like this one-way communication from the early 90s. But it looks like we just got hoodwinked.
Don't fantasy book. Also, if we're actually going to die, this is going to be the shortest Journey Quest episode ever, because literally the switch was flipped. And if we're dead, then it's just, we're dead. So, Andrew, are we dead?
Well, hold on. Our ghosts might be able to inhabit other robot bodies or something. We'll see. Well, that's not up to us. Let's see how the facts played out.
Yeah. As the machine starts to turn on, they look through the window and they see this entire humongous cavernous covering miles of acreage refrigerated vault. That's the USDA food storage center that keeps everything that ever was made.
And they realize, man,
this may not have been the best idea.
And for the record, Justin, that was a very specific order from Quiznos that they happen to have ready to go. You don't think that's weird?
You could just make Quiznos subs.
Yeah, no, I don't, really. Like, they just needed those kind of maybe that bread. But, I mean, like, would you really be able to eyeball the different loaves from, like, Subway and Quiznos? They maybe need the, like, cold cuts.
Is there a sauce? Is there a Quiznos sauce that might have been hard to replicate?
In my imagination, there was.
You eat Quiznos all the time.
I just said it. It just appeared. It was amazing.
Okay.
Whatever. All right. So now we look out. We feel very, very silly. The switch has been flipped. What happens?
Machine starts to vibrate, starts to shake. You smell some sort of strange gas. You feel a little bit woozy. Things go dark. You pass out.
Uh-oh. Hey, Justin, are you passed out too? I'm passed out right now. There's a blackness that has enveloped me.
You're yourself in your dream, Brian.
In my dream, the two of us are playing badminton. We're world champions of badminton.
You feel like you're drifting through space.
No,
you feel like there's no up
badminton.
And there's no down.
Oh,
just dangling, but you're strangely warm.
The shuttlecock goes back and forth between the two of us because we're in space.
Now it feels like there's a bunch of blankets on you, and one by one they're peeling away, and you start to see light. You start to feel a sensation.
Emerging from the cocoon!
And now you wake up. You're staring up into the sky. It's a cloudy sky. And you realize you're cold because you're naked. And you're laying in the grass. Both of you, side by side.
Together? Like, are our fingers touching each other?
If you want your fingers to touch, whatever you want to touch.
I'm asking for the facts.
You're cradling each other. You're cradling each other like little infants inside of a womb.
Ahoy.
And you look around, and there are trees. There are tall trees. There's coniferous trees. You seem to be in the middle of a meadow around a forest.
I stand up and immediately, just get the wiggles out.
I cover my junk.
No, I leave my junk out, but I wiggle all around to get everything nice and loose, just so it's not weird.
And your clothes are actually folded in a pile next to you, by the way.
I steal Justin's clothes.
I equip clothes.
I already took the clothes and ran away from Justin, cackling like a gnome.
How do you respond to this, Justin?
I let him go because I've been literally trying to abandon him for like the last like four episodes. So.
I only make it like 4 or 5 meters before my feet start to hurt. And I was like, all right, that wasn't very funny anyway. I hand him his clothes. I put on my clothes.
Okay, so Brian, we're alive.
Hey!
Double plus one to that because yep. I thought for sure we'd be dead.
But what year is it?
I'm going to assume that was not actually a time machine and they just gassed us and experimented on us and left us in a random thing.
They said it was a time machine. Why would they lie?
They also said they had a time machine that brought back Quiznos and they just had a vault of Quiznos.
Okay, well, let's put
you
a pin in
that. You don't know
that
they were pulling the food from the vault.
Yeah, that's a – see, listen,
you only know
listen
they had
to
a
the
vault
narrator.
With the capabilities to
that's,
do it.
That's right.
Maybe – you don't know when that vault started. Maybe they put the vault together – last year,
hey,
and they were going throughout time to get food to put into the vault.
Justin, maybe they outfitted you with the same super sweet upgrades I have, so I jump as high as I can. How high am I able to jump?
About 8 inches.
Uh-oh.
Oh! Hey, why don't you ask your best Nazi friend, Adolf AI, the answer to
okay,
all your questions?
I say, Adolf, scan the area, and I look around.
Crickets, nothing.
I hit my head thrice. Boom, boom, boom.
Your head
Adolf.
Hurts.
I punch a rock.
Your fist hurts.
No!
Might be like the Terminator, man. You know, you don't get all the gadgets you want. Except like giant killing machine robots.
I turn to Justin and weep openly. Sad that I am robbed of the power that I had so enjoyed.
Continuing the disgust that I've had with Brian's fascination with these Nazi upgrades, I reject his outward pouring of sadness.
I turn to the blue skies above me and narrate as though somebody were listening. Well, look at this guy. Guess who's a fair weather friend?
We look around. We try to see any kind of signs of life or civilization to walk toward.
Somebody's coming.
Hide. Sounds like a stampede.
Hide behind the rock, Justin.
Okay, we jump behind a rock.
All right. You look, and you notice that there's on the meadow, there's sort of a little bit of an incline, and you start to see shadows on the edge of it, and you see banners. You see banners on poles, and you see men in helmets, and you see lines of horses. There's at least like 200 men and horses in armor.
What kind of armor? Are we looking at like Japanese samurai armor? Are we looking at futuristic Mad Max armor? Are we looking at medieval period armor?
Rusty medieval looking armor. Hmm. And like some of them have like checkered, you know, banners on them. Some of them have different kind of sigils on them. And different
stay down and listen closely for more details. Can we hear what they're saying?
Yeah, it's like I don't know. They're speaking French, and they, you know, whatever. Sound maybe like French? Could be.
I give a gesture towards Justin that would seem to intimate that he should imitate a bird call.
And
doesn't sound like it did much.
You hear more hoofs, more things. In the opposite direction, and you look on the other rise, what is there? More men in armor. More men in suits. More pennants.
Similar armor?
I mean, a little different, a little different.
But like as if it came from the same time period, like.
Yeah, definitely.
They look like similar cultures.
Do they look like they're charging toward each other?
I mean, they're now lined up facing each other, and you guys are kind of in the middle, hiding behind rocks.
All right, Justin, listen.
Yeah.
It seems like there's about to be an epic battle between two warring factions of roughly similarly outfitted armies. In psychology, there's something called a pattern interruption. Did you ever see Saving Private Ryan? There's this moment that they're about to start fighting, and then Tom Hanks says, "Oh, I was an English teacher," and it really shakes everyone out of it. Let's do that. Let's hop up.
All right. Here we go. Are you ready, Brian?
Yeah. No. Three, two, clothes.
One. I grab Brian by the back of his shirt and I hold him up and say, "I found the traitor, and I'll sell him to the highest bidder."
I immediately start taking off my pants just in an effort to, because I assume we're working together on this. So I'm bottom naked and I start kicking and I start doing a Popeye impression. Hi, ta 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 dee dee.
Yeah, and I'm like, no, just keep saying I'm the traitor. I killed your mom.
Okay, I give Justin the benefit of the doubt and say, "I'm a traitor. What wares do I have for ye? I'm the traitor."
And you hear an eruption of laughter from both sides.
Oh, man.
Just peals of laughter. And comments about you. You don't speak French or German or English, the old ancient English, but you hear that sounds something like the words cold, diminutive, childlike.
I don't know. I cry. I begin to weep uncontrollably.
And then you go grab your pants.
No, I'm defeated. I know
some archers just shot arrows through the air and they pinned them to the ground.
Yeah, so apparently, throughout the machinations of linguistics, the phrase "toddler" has survived.
I look for a snake.
You find yourself surrounded by arrows, and you're pinned in.
Okay. I begin to do the chicken dance, continuously convinced that if I can just distract them, things will calm down.
All right. Two knights from either side come marching on their coming on their horses.
And meanwhile,
right
I'm going.
Yeah. Both kind of staring at you. One of them says to the other one, and you know, maybe comes like French, English, some sort of language. Let's call it off for today. This is not a good sign.
It's working, Justin.
Other army retreats. Right? Find yourself surrounded by knights.
Yeah.
I keep on going.
You know, some guy gets off his horse, walks up to you and says, what landest art thou from?
What landest art thou from?
And you get stricken across the face with a chain gauntlet.
All right. So Florida for me. And my pal here is from Texas. And he's a trader. And I'll be
Sounds
happy
like
to sell it to you.
Spaniard to me. Florida. Spaniards.
Oh, no. I don't know. Geez. Oh, I mean,
hey,
what?
Justin.
Do you want me to be from?
One second. Might I palaver with my compatriot here? Hey, Justin, what if it really was a time machine? What if it's 1400s? What if we got teleported? Because think about it, like, we showed up naked, and these guys are all, like, old-timey.
We also had our clothes with us, though. That seems weird.
All right. You're like, hey, your fool amuses us. We're going to bring him to our duke to entertain him.
I give a significant glance to Justin and cock one eyebrow high as if to say, a duke? Maybe I'm right.
I'll tell you what. Do me a favor, Sir Purchase-a-Lot. You got a few...
doubloons for old Spaniard selling fool man? And also, which way is the airport? Also, do you have a Wi-Fi that I could hook up to? Because I'm trying to get
you
this.
You amuse us too. You shall put on a show for the Duke. And all of a sudden, there's this cart. You're thrown into the back of the cart, like with some squealing pigs and some mud and stuff.
I'm still
being hauled away.
I take a break. I realize that this is my one moment to rest up for my next performance. So I stop performing the chicken dance and I sit down. I cross my arms and legs and I close my eyes in sweet repose to get ready for my next performance.
All right. And there's an old man sitting in the cart. And he's like, "Oh, you're the new entertainers, I see."
Shh, yeah. I say to him.
"Hey, by the way, where are we? I think we got a little lost."
"Oh, you're in the Duchy of, is it Aragonia? I don't know. It changes so much. It's hard to tell. You know, I forget which shire we're in."
So I lean over to Justin and I start to give him notes on our next performance. I was like, "Listen, this is going to be a big moment when we perform for the Duke."
"Right. Let's go ahead and table that for 5 seconds. So we've been on the road for a long time. What year are we in the year of our Lord? What are we in?"
"Oh, I think it's the 23rd year of our Duke's reign. I think it's about then."
"Okay. So what season of Seinfeld just aired?"
"So you're brought to a castle. There's a castle. Actually, come there. There's mud huts, everything, all of that, you know, squealing pigs, naked children, all the gross things they had in medieval times, right?" "I didn't care back then, right? You're brought through the castle. You brought this mud through the mud. You brought across a moat. You're brought into there, and they bring you down into a, we'll call it a dungeon, but they say it's the artist headquarters, the entertainer's headquarters. And you're put in a cell. There's a knock on the door."
I take this moment to remind everyone that my writer specifically says no mayonnaise on any of my delicious treats.
If you keep talking, you're literally going to get a rider. You're going to have somebody slap me saddle back.
Yeah. All right. "Well, Brian, there's good news, bad news. Good news is they want to accommodate. The bad news, I don't think there's anybody here who can read."
"Right. Okay. So I, again, mentioned that they really should have talked to my agent before this booking. But I'm willing to work with whatever they got. What, by the way, also, what do you got?"
"What we need is we need you guys to do like 15 minute show for Duke to entertain him. Listen, acts he likes, he gives money to, sends them off on their way. Acts he doesn't like, we need to get into that."
"Yeah. Hey, Justin."
"Yeah.
I think we need to pull out our A material, if you know what I mean."
I'm afraid of what you think our A material is.
"Oh, yeah, I mean, remember it's that like, bit that
the
we
last
were...
we had some other travelers who showed up in the middle of the meadow suspiciously, they called themselves what was the term they used to do? It's jugglers. I think kind of like our jongler, but they were sort of jugglers.
Sure.
And They were technically skillful, they were good, but they used the same lines as the last group of jugglers that came through here, and our Duke kind of hates copying, and so kind of like killed off their
Boy, do we have good news for your Duke, because unlike those jugglers, you, my friend, have found two juggalos.
Oh, good. Good. And the other thing he hates is, like, he hates comedians and magicians.
Well, good. No, we're juggalos.
Okay. Well, it's a good thing I'm a philosopher, and Brian here is a...
He loves magic. He loves magic. It's too bad you're a philosopher, because he really loves magic. Loves it.
But the magic of philosophy is truly enchanting.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to let you guys plan. I'm going to leave you. Go get things ready. I got to go polish the stage, get the candles lit, sharpen the guillotine, which they didn't invent until like much later, but we came up with our own sort of version of that, thinking that Brian, someday they'd have it.
There's only one way to go.
What?
the current state of fire eating is will last for as long as anyone can project.
So you're saying I got to eat fire. Hey, real quick, guardmaster, do you have hydrocarbons of a sort? Have ye any whale oil? No?
You want, we have pitch. We have pitch with coal.
Okay. All right. Look, I have an idea, Justin. Listen.
Yeah.
It's a big deal for me to ask this of you, but it worked so well at Dragon Con back in the day. We need you to do the all set up magician, and we need you to do it long enough for us to survive forever. You need to outlast them. You need to set up bit after bit in nested scripts so that we're so deep that they can't possibly slay us before they find out where this is headed.
So you want me to go in front of a power mad Duke who kills acts that he does not like and intentionally do a bit that has no payoff that makes the audience feel like they've been had?
Yes.
I kind of like you eating unsafe fire better.
Yeah. Okay, look, I'm just saying you'll be more engaging, and then while you're doing that, I could kind of sneak around the sides. I'll act like your assistant, constantly doing the setup, and then I'll get behind the Duke, and I'll hold a knife up to his throat, and then we can demand that we get...
All right. You want to know, you got to drive the last time that, you know, we wound up murdering a bunch of people that were there for your birthday party. I'm going to do it my way. Here.
All right, you take the lead.
We're ready for our show.
I bang on the cage saying, "We're ready to perform."
All right, I'm going to take you to wardrobe. There's a lot of different costumes you can choose. You know, outfits.
I choose what looks like Tron with the Hyalai scoop basket.
Why is your friend holding up nothing?
My friend? Justin.
See this Tron Hyalai basket. I'm explaining what we have here. Now you can tell me your fantasy sort of things, fool, but we have jester outfits. We have a few different kinds. We've got Harlequins too. Harlequins, yep. We've got jesters. We've got sometimes the Duke likes it when men dress up as maidens and dance for him.
Okay, I dress up as a maiden. I dress up and I put Bugs Bunny style. I put on big red lipstick and I start practicing my.
There's a big shock. All right, I dress up in the classic jester outfit.
Fantastic. All right. You brought up the stairs. Go through some curtains. There's some fanfare. Right. Brought up there. Go around. There's people crowding around. It's court. They kind of look a little bit bored, like maybe they've been stuck here for a while.
I make eyes with a few of the gentlemen courtiers.
All right. So here I come out. I triumphantly take center stage and I say, Duke, fair Duke, we have come from far to give you our precious gift of song, dance, and entertainment. I would like to present to you the hearty wench, Brianna.
I walk up holding my dress as daintily as I can. I cross my legs and give a deep bow, keeping my knees straight and letting ever so much of my ankle show to the gentlemen courtiers of the court.
Okay, I lean over to Brian, and I just go, all right, listen, this is going to seem really, really weird. You just need to go with it, okay?
I look Justin, we lock eyes, and I say, I trust you as a friend and compatriot who have been together through thick and thin. I know that whatever you have in store for us is what's best for us in the long term.
All right, I say, all right, y'all, I need you guys to start clapping. Here we go. And everybody...
I start miming a big clapping motion so that everybody does it to a one singular beat.
At which point I begin, there's only one place where you can go where the price is right. And I sing the entire radio edit of Two Live Crews.
The funk shop.
The funk shop.
The funk shop. Yeah, yeah. Selling it. I do that 80s dance where you shake your chest in front of people to show that I'm into it.
And I just keep telling Brian, scandalous, scandalous, more twerk it, twerk it.
I show all the way up to my mid-calf to various people.
At the funk shop! And then I end with big jazz hands.
So your escort says, gentlemen, that's great. And as soon as we open up the big doors and bring you into the Duke's chamber, you can do your show. People waiting on the outside are very entertained by this.
I cast a sidelong glance at Justin as if to say, again.
I mean, medieval architecture, geez. Like, you just never know where you are, right? This is a great castle.
All right, take a deep breath.
That was the inside of the where the Duke was.
I begin to do my vocal warm-up exercises. The puppets of capital is not in Canada, rather in Mexico, Mexico, Mexico. Canada, Monaco, Remedy, Remedy. Yes, Tibet, Tibet, Tibet.
So two doors open up. It's a darkened room. There's some candles around there. At the end of it, there's tapestries on the floor. There's just candles spread throughout, and at the end of the room, you see a canopied bed with like a thick kind of silk, whatever sort of material that you can't quite see through. You vaguely see the outline of somebody there, but they're laying in bed.
Okay, I take a deep breath in, and I mutter, "At the funk shop, at the funk shop."
All right, your escort says, "Okay, gentlemen, you're on," and he backs up, shuts the door. Closed. It's just you two into the room.
Right.
The canopy bed.
And so I shout to the crowd, like, all y'all!
It's literally just the bed, right?
I mean, there's somebody in the bed.
I shout. Okay, look, Justin, we've talked about this. There's always a crowd there. You just have to imagine them. All right, ready?
As I put a full backhand into Brian's face.
I say, Adolf, status report.
Ladies, we know what's going on with them, right? Hey, Duke, this one's for you. We've come from near and far, mostly far.
Okay. Frustrated by Justin's assertion of dominance, I changed the plan, and instead of performing the number we had just rehearsed by Two Live Crew, I instead begin to enact and dance to the Fat Boys and Wipeout. Wipe it out.
Another backhand graces Brian's face.
You can't tell if it's laughter or coughing and laughter.
Wah, wah, wah. Wah, wah, wah.
This time, sparing the backhand, it's a full fist right across Brian's chin.
I point at the bed and mouth the words, "Maybe he's Santa."
all right, Brian, here we go. Big finish.
Hey, watch out. Wah, wah, wah.
This time, a full jumping roundhouse kick catches Brian right in the temple.
Well, then you notice next time on Journey Quest.
I think we nailed it, Justin. I think we got this.
Brian, gentlemen. Think we're going to be killed because I think that dude just died. Dude just died laughing.
You killed it.
Hey, man, I got a pick.
What a pick.
Dude, we're going to talk about it on Spoiler in Time right after Chord Killers. But season 2 of The Expanse is out. And I tried real hard to watch it, through traditional cable means. And it was not a pleasant experience. And I ended up just buying it on Amazon. And I'll tell you what, man. It's It's tempting to immediately compare it to Battlestar Galactica, and we've talked about this before. I think the first season of Battlestar Galactica is maybe the best single season of science fiction ever, full stop. But part of the reason it was so good is because it was so human and so great, even though it was in a mythical, you know, faraway place and time. Whereas The Expanse is great for different reasons. It's not as human and visceral as Battlestar Galactica, but it is so tangible. It is so the universe in 20 minutes from now. It's in the solar system. It's very, very believable. It's a Cold War story between, you know, Earth and Mars and the folks on the asteroid belt. I'm just loving it, loving it, loving it. If you haven't watched it, you could dive in, watch the whole first season, and jump into the second season.
And the first season's on Amazon now for free?
Oh, is it?
It's on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I found out in the last episode of Jury, while I interviewed my friend Harry Terjanian, and we were remembering that there was a point where we were both in college sketch comedy groups that he and his group came to Syracuse to do a festival, and they all wound up sleeping on my floor. And one of the people that was in that group was Donald Glover from Atlanta and Childish Gambino. He's, you know, absolutely taking off, and he's insanely talented. But what I did not know until Harry reminded me was also apparently in that group and sleeping on my floor was Rachel Bloom of F Me, Ray Bradbury, the
no
viral
kidding.
Show, and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, the show on the CW. So I wound up, I had never watched Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, hot on this news. I watched a couple episodes. It's really, 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 it's a well-constructed, ambitious show that does like two musical numbers per episode, which is kind of crazy. But if you liked Glee, I would recommend it as being very good. And it is certainly a tremendous headlong dive into female neuroses, which is something that I always enjoy and reminds me greatly. So much so that I had to call and make sure that she was watching the show of a friend of Andrew and I, Rachel, who is also a neurotic, very smart, funny Jewish lady, and it delighted me in how similar the characters were. So Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is my pick.
I have a pick, and the pick is Split, M. Night Shyamalan, his new movie, and I felt like I haven't been into his movies in, let's say, maybe over a decade and a half. And I saw this. I enjoyed it. I think that some of the writing kind of was some of his sort of heavy-handed kind of like, well, that wasn't as subtle as that maybe could have been, whatever. And here's the thing. Because here's where it's going to get tricky. Is the only reason I saw this was because I heard of a spoiler for it. A spoiler for it actually made me want to go see it.
I only know about it because Jeff Cannata implored as a gift to everyone. He said, "You want a gift? Go see Split," not knowing literally anything about it. See it right now before you hear about it, before you hear reviews of it, before everything. And I tried to make that happen, but I wasn't able to do it before I went out on the road. I'm still hoping that'll happen.
I'm not going to spoil it, okay? But I'm going to qualify it. In the story itself, it's not a kind of like, you know, and it turns out it's modern day times kind of thing. It's not the kind of twist that you normally would expect with an M. Night Shyamalan movie. I would say it's a different kind.
It's not like a Vanilla Sky kind of like, bleh.
No, and I was worried that it was going to be one of these things like it's all in his head kind
right,
of thing,
right?
You know, and it wasn't that kind of thing. It was a different, and it's not even, I would say, a twist.
Right on.
In a sense, we do it. So, I Justin, when I told you this, did this make you want to go see it more?
Oh yeah, 150%. It is, I don't even want to qualify because it does immediately remind me of a thing that happened in another film. But I to even mention that would be
yeah,
far more would be very, very interesting. Like I will say this, the twist. Yeah, I can't even think of a way that doesn't, you know, like edge toward.
Yeah, I brought a friend who knew nothing. I said, "Do you want me to tell you anything?" He's like, "Nope, we're gonna go." So I'm like, "Okay, because if we're going to go see it, I don't need to tell you anything." And it he literally lost his blank when it happened for reasons for, you know, loved it. So anyhow, that's my pick. Is Split.
Right.
Same theater. Yeah.
It's very, very interesting who reacts to it and who doesn't, because there is there is a qualifier, which is interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my pick on that. And I think in a couple of weeks we'll have to be able to discuss it because, you know, time's up. Spoiler time will be up. My opinion.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, I was not going to see this movie until I heard this. I'm like, oh, that's motivates me. So there we go. Gentlemen.
Also, yeah.
It's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.